Upaya yuja bhavanti so bhuto jala bhavudavat Tvayi tali me tato vivida namaganai parame Sita bandhave madhuni lilya rasesharasaha All that writing up on the board paid dividends, eh? Brothers? Or mother? Na katta udbhava prakriti purushayo rajayo upaya yuja bhavancha subhrito jala bubudhavat Nagatate does not happen. Udbhavaha, the generation, prakriti of material nature, purushayo, and of the soul who is her enjoyer. Ajayo, who are unborn. Ubhaya, of both. Yujja, by the contamination. Bhavanti, come into being. Asubritaha, living bodies. Jala, on water. Bubuddha, bubbles. Vat, like. Tvayi, in you. Tieme, these living beings. Tataha, therefore. Vivida, various. Nam, with names. Ganai, and qualities. Parame, in the supreme. Sarita, rivers. Eva, as. Anlave, within the ocean. Madhuni, in honey. Lilyu, become merged. Asesha, all. Rasaha, flavors. Translation. Neither material nature nor the soul who tries to enjoy her are ever born. Yet living bodies come into being when these two combine. Just as bubbles from where water meets the air, and just as rivers merge into the ocean, or the nectar from many different flowers blends into honey, so all these conditioned beings eventually merge back into you, the Supreme, along with their various names and qualities. Purport. Without proper spiritual guidance, one may misunderstand the Veda's description of the living entities emanating from the Lord to mean that they have come into being in this process and will eventually pass again into non-existence. But if the living entities were to thus have only temporary existence, then when one of them would die, his remaining karma would simply vanish without being used up, and when a soul would be born, he would appear with unaccountable karma he had done nothing to earn. Furthermore, a living being's liberation would amount to the total eradication of his identity and being. So that's there the Vedas personified, presenting very logically and with great reasoning that the soul is eternal. Otherwise, the philosophy of karma cannot actually function. So, as opposed to, therefore, sometimes people refer to religion as a type of faith, something you believe in. But Srila Prabhupada, although Krishna consciousness is a religion, but it is also the science of spirit and matter. It is not Krishna consciousness is not presented that you just have to believe even if something is unreasonable, you just have to accept it. Krishna consciousness is not based on that. There are so many, here we see in these prayers of the personified Vedas, that they go to extreme lengths to make sure that the philosophy that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead who created the material world through his material energy, or manifest the spiritual world through his spiritual energy, and manifest all the unlimited infinitesimal tiny spirit souls through his marginal energy. That is the philosophy of the Vedas, and in order to prove that, the Vedas personified present so many logical, reasonable explanations, so that it's not just a matter of blind faith that one is accepting, you know, what is presented here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there are, you know, philosophers such as the, Jaimini and Kanada. They present the Nyaya and Vaisheshika philosophies, and they propose that everything is ultimately the ultimate cause of things is a combination of material atoms, material elements, and therefore liberation. When there is liberation, these various causes of suffering gradually eliminated until there is liberation, which means there is no more consciousness. Others, such as the Sankhyas, the atheistic Sankhyas, they believe that the soul has no qualities, and that when the soul is free from all qualities, then there is liberation. There are various different philosophies like this, but generally all of those philosophers accept the principle of karma. So the problem there is that makes their philosophy contradictory, because either they have to not accept the principle of karma, or they have to accept the fact that the soul is eternal, because you can't have both. If the soul is eternal, that means that when the soul leaves this body, that same individual can then, in the next life, get their karma and suffer and enjoy according to what they've previously done. If there is no soul, then at death, who gets the karma? If there's no soul, if there's no eternal soul, then who gets the karma? So then, you know, how can karma have any validity? There must be, in order for there to be karma, there must be someone who gets it. So, therefore, the soul must be an eternal, individual, spiritual particle, different from the material elements. So, that means that there are serious flaws in all other philosophies that do not accept that the spirit soul is spirit, that the living entity is spiritual by nature, and that spiritual nature is completely distinct from the material body that they're encased in, and that spiritual nature is eternal. So, just, you know, with these various points, of course, they just completely smash to pieces all the, you know, all other philosophies, as just, you know, there's so many contradictions, and they just don't stand up to logical reason. Also, as described here, so for instance, you know, if people assume that the soul or the living entity, when someone takes birth, then as a result of encagement within the material body, then consciousness is produced. That means that a person is actually beginning from the time they're born. If they're beginning from the time they're born, then they also would have no karma. Right? Because this is their... So it means that they've done nothing in their previous life, because if when they... consciousness, the individual, is simply produced by the the material body. That means they have actually taken birth, or that individual has started at that point. If that is their start, then there's no karma from a previous existence, because that is the beginning. If there's no karma from a previous existence, of course we can no longer explain how different living entities take birth in different species of life. Some take birth in higher levels, some take birth in lower levels. So either that means that God is partial and is very mean to some, giving creation to living entities, and when they're created he puts them in the body of a worm, and others, when he creates them, he puts them in the body of a demigod. Or it would mean that God, there is no God, and everything is happening by chance. So these various philosophies, it means that they either accept that there is no karma, if they have these other philosophies, or that there is no God, or that God is not very intelligent, or God is not all good. So one way or another, there has to be consistency. But their philosophies are not consistent. They're actually contradictory. For someone was saying the other day to me that, you know, you quite often hear people, completely materialistic people, who they don't believe in God. They don't believe in reincarnation. They're just, you know, this life is all in all. And yet they still talk in terms of, oh, that's your karma. You know, they'll say that, oh, you know, that's your karma. But it's totally, it sounds good, it gets an emotional reaction, but there is no substance to that statement. It's just like everything else, you know, it's just an empty statement with nothing to back it up. If you ask them about it, then, you know, their understanding of what they've just said is absent. If you just said that, that's your karma. What do you mean by that? They don't know. They're just empty statements. And even, you know, most people who claim to be philosophers and, you know, you meet many people and they'll sit there and they'll make out they're very intellectual. I have a friend whose partner, he got a grant to, he got a grant from the government, $20,000, so he could, you know, continue his studies on philosophy. And something like that. So, you know, I've discussed with him a few times, and, you know, he'll say something about philosophy, and I'll just point out, well, that doesn't really make sense, does it, for such and such a reason? And, you know, he'll get very upset, but he can't do anything about it. He's got no comeback, he's got no substance to sort of, and yet the government, you know, is giving him a grant to study philosophy, to complete his PhD, and then to teach that to others. But you see, and you know, but persons such as that, you know, I spoke to him about some of these different philosophers, or well, he's never even heard of these ones. You know, the main philosophers, they study, you know, popular philosophers that really in the course of history have no real standing at all. But, you know, they'll fill up the classes and you'll get your money at the end of the day. So, anyway. We'll continue with the purport. The truth is, however, that the soul's existence is one with Brahman's, just as the small portion of space contained within the walls of a clay pot is one in essence with the all-expanding sky. And like the making and breaking of a pot, the birth, in inverted commas, of an individual soul consists of his first becoming covered by the material body, and his death or liberation consists of the destruction of his gross and subtle bodies once and for all. Certainly, such birth and death take place only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So here it is explaining that what we actually, when the Vedas talk in terms of the birth of the living entities and the death of living entities, they're actually referring to when the spirit soul, who is Brahman or spirit, eternal, that those individual spirit souls are covered by a material body, that's birth. When that spirit soul is uncovered by that material body, that's death. And the same as if we take air and we cover it with a clay pot and then we uncover it like that. So, in actuality, the air was always there. But then it was covered by a clay pot and then it was uncovered. So it didn't really become born. In the same way, the spirit soul was always there, and although it became covered by a material body, it didn't actually take birth, and when it became uncovered by the material body at death, it didn't really die. It's apparent. The combination of material nature and her controller that produces the numerous conditioned beings in material creation is likened here to the combination of water and air that produces countless bubbles of foam on the sea surface of the sea. Just as the efficient cause, air, impels the ingredient cause, water, to form itself into bubbles, so by his glance the supreme Purush inspires Prakriti to transform herself into the array of material elements and the innumerable material forms manifest from those elements. Prakriti thus serves as the Upadana Karana, or ingredient cause of creation. So that's material nature. So if again the Vedas say that material nature is the cause of creation, they're considering that there are different combination of causes, and material nature is the cause in the sense that it creates the ingredients for the material bodies. So the living entities, of which there is a spirit soul encaged in a material body, part of the cause is that material nature is creating those ingredients, or that material body, creating water then forms a bubble around air as an ingredient for that bubble. In order for the bubble to be produced, it must have the ingredient supplied in the form of that water, you know, that covers the air. At the same time, as described here, it's the air which is also a cause for creating that bubble by affecting the water in that particular way, in the same way that when the living entity is a material nature, it affects the material energy in a particular way as to create certain types of coverings, material coverings. In the ultimate issue, however, since she is also an expansion of the Supreme Lord, it is the Lord alone who is the ingredient cause as well as the efficient cause. So again, because material nature is actually the Lord's energy, so ultimately the real cause, the ultimate cause, is the Lord. This is as stated in the Taittiriya Tiriya Upanishad, Tasmadva itasmad atmana akasya sambhuta. From this supreme soul, the ether evolved. And so, kamyata bahusham prajayaya, he desired, let me become many by expanding into progeny. The individual jiva souls are not created when born from the Supreme Lord and Prakriti, nor are they destroyed when they merge back into the Lord, rejoining him in the pleasure pastimes of his eternal kingdom. And in the same way as the infinitesimal jivas can appear to undergo birth and death without any factual change, the Supreme Lord can send forth and withdraw his emanations without himself undergoing any transformation. Thus the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad affirms, Avanasivare Yamatma, this Atma is indeed indestructible. A statement that can be applied to both the Supreme Soul and the subordinate Jiva Soul. So, again, here the Vedas personified within their explanation, they have explained, which is not so difficult to understand, how the living entity appears to take birth, but really what is happening is that that eternal spirit soul is being covered by a material body, and when the spirit soul appears to take die, it is that that spirit soul is then being uncovered by that material encasement. Now, this same In the same, so from that, what we understand is that the spirit soul actually doesn't change, although he appears to. Right? So from a material perspective, we might think, consciousness has changed from one body to another. So consciousness is being transformed according to the various bodies. But actually, the consciousness of the soul is eternally unchanged and is simply being encaged and uncaged like that. In the same way, the Supreme Spirit also, even though he appears within the material world, he does not actually become changed. So therefore, we can understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is also eternal. He is not a product of the material world. As explained by Srila Sridhar Swami, the dissolution of the living being's natural condition occurs in two ways, partial and complete. Partial dissolution occurs when the soul experiences dreamless sleep, when he leaves his body, and when all souls re-enter the body of Mahavishnu at the time of universal annihilation. These different types of dissolution are like the mixing of nectar brought by bees from different kinds of flowers. The different flavors of nectar represent the dormant individual karmic reactions of each living entity, which still exist but cannot easily be distinguished from one another. In contrast, the ultimate dissolution of the soul's material condition is his liberation from samsara, which is like the flowing of rivers into the ocean. As the waters from different rivers merge together after entering the ocean and become indistinguishable from one another, so the false material designations of the jivas are given up at the time of liberation, and all the liberated jivas once again become equally situated as servants of the Supreme Lord. So here is describing, again, to further clarify, that there are different types of dissolution of the living entity in this material world. When the living entity is asleep, we can understand, here it says, when he experiences dreamless sleep. It's a partial dissolution. Also, when he leaves his body, partial dissolution when he leaves his body, and when all souls re-enter the body of Mahavishnu at the time of universal annihilation. So, of course, when the spirit soul in this material body is sleeping, he appears to become disconnected from the material body, and to some degree there is some detachment, there is some disconnection from the functions of the material body, but as we know, the person is still connected with the material body, but there is some detachment. When the spirit soul leaves the material body, again, there appears to be a dissolution of his material existence, but it is not complete because he still takes his karma with him, and within that karma are all his material desires and material proclivities like that. So it's not a complete dissolution of his material existence because he's actually taking the subtle form of his material conditioning in the form of his material desires and material nature, and that will carry him into his next body. But there is certainly loss of the gross body, so it is a partial dissolution. Also, when the spirit at the end of Lord Brahma's day, or actually at the end of Lord Brahma's night, Lord Brahma's day and Lord Brahma's night, when the soul actually enters in the body of Garbhadaksha Vishnu or Mahavishnu, then the soul, there is another type of dissolution in which all the material elements of material existence are, you know, dissolved and merged together in one sense, and the spirit souls enter the body of the Lord to wait for the next creation. But while they're actually within the Lord, they still have, there's not a complete dissolution because they actually still have their desires. That there's a covering of ignorance still. Very, very subtle. Even the material desires are slightly dissolved, but that covering of ignorance, a particular level of covering, is still there. Therefore, in the next creation, when the living entities are again let loose in the material energy and all the material elements are again combined to form various material bodies, the Lord, sitting as a super soul within the heart, reminds them of their previous material desires and aspirations, and they again start from where they left off. So it is a partial dissolution of their existence, their material existence, but not completely. There is still that subtle, subtle part of material existence which has not been dissolved, even when they enter within the body of the Lord. There is still that conception that I am the enjoyer of the, you know, I am the enjoyer, full stop. I am the enjoyer. So that form of ignorance, not understanding and forgetfulness of their nature that I am the eternal servant of the actual enjoyer, the Lord, Supreme Lord, they've forgotten that, therefore they're in ignorance. And they're also an illusion, thinking that they are that person. That subtle covering is still there. And that is the perpetuates their material existence, and therefore their material existence has not been completely dissolved. So it's not a total liberation, it's not a total death. It's there. So that is like, it's described there, that is like the if you, you know, when a bee hums around and they stop on a flower and they get the pollen of a rose, and then they may hum around and they get the pollen of, you know, a frangipanis, and then, you know, they'll collect, you know, all the blue gums, and they'll collect all the various flowers, the pollens, and they'll bring it all back to the hive, and the queen bee will say, oh, well done, well done. And then they'll mix it all, you know, they get out their little, have their little factory in there, and they mix it all together and they create this honey. But actually the subtle flavours from each of the various trees and flowers are actually present. Even though it's all mixed together, it, you know, you get one combined flavour, but it is still all present. All those various flavours are still there. They keep their quality. You see that with you know, people who do food tasting and wine tasting. I don't know if you ever sat next to korma and eaten prasadam. You know, although there may be a sabji, and of course it has basically one flavour. But if you sit next to korma, he'll just say, you know, there's just a, could have done just a little bit more turmeric and perhaps, you know, a little less of the, you know, cardamom. So he can pick up each of the individual flavours and the quantities, even though it's just one, You know, for a lot of people it's just that subject. You know, you sit next to Kwame, you ask him. You probably don't have to ask him, you usually volunteer it. So, in the same way, that flavour is, you know, what's the word? Analogous, something like that, to the subtle desires of the living entities, even when they have entered within the body of Mahavishnu at the time of dissolution. So it appears that those flavours are still present, even though they actually have become one with the Lord in one sense, right? Now they're actually their existence is one with Mahavishnu, but still the individual flavours of each little living entity is still preserved, and therefore they can again be separated. We find that with, you know, scientists do that. They will, you know, they can take, say, water, and of course we can understand that there is hydrogen and oxygen which form water. They can again, although they become one, they can again be separated. And you know, with forensic science you see that they can, you know, analyse, you know, a body may have died, and they'll analyse, you know, every trace of elements, what's in the blood, how did this person die, and they can see all the various ingredients and they can separate them and understand the quantities and the types of elements that are there. So although the living entities become one with the Supreme Lord by entering within his body, they don't actually lose that individual nature and their own particular flavour of their material you know, coverings, and that again becomes you know, the next creation, they again take birth. So the living entities are eternal, that's the point. Even though in different states they appear to be taking birth, they appear to be dying, and in some cases they appear to be merging with the Lord. But in all cases it's understood that they're eternally individual. And we see that there is so much evidence of that, how that is, you know, the way things are in everything. We don't see anything really merging and becoming one properly. Even here, it gives the example here of the rivers, that when the living entities ultimately attain complete liberation, they do lose all traces of any material, their material existence is completely eradicated. There's not even the slightest covering of ignorance, not even the slightest material desire or proclivity. And they again enter into this spiritual energy. But in that spiritual energy, the Supreme Lord, who, as we have described, is eternal, he keeps his eternal individuality, and the living entities, they keep their eternal individuality. And because the spirit soul is active, conscious, there are many, many activities there reciprocated in pure devotion, pure love between the living entities and the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world. So just as rivers come together and they may join in the ocean, sometimes you may get the river Jamuna joining with the Ganges River, but still, as Srila Prabhupada describes in the Krishna book, although the river Ganges and the river Jamuna may merge, and they may lose their appear to merge, still they're actually distinguishable to some degree. And sometimes you also see where the rivers enter into the ocean, but there is a difference between that fresh water, non-salty, and the salt water of the ocean. You know, they still keep their individual natures. So So therefore they remain servants of the Lord. So then the Upanishads describe these dissolutions as follows. My dear boy, this partial dissolution resembles what happens when honeybees collect honey by extracting the nectar from the flowers of various kinds of trees and merge it all into a single mixture. Just as the mixed nectars cannot distinguish, I am the juice of such and such a flower, or I am the juice of another flower. So, dear boy, when all these living entities merge together, they cannot consciously think, now we have merged. That is from the Chandogya Upanishad. And from the Mundaka Upanishad, as rivers flow to their dissolution in the sea, giving up their names and forms at their destination, so the wise man who becomes free from material names and forms attains to the Supreme Absolute, the wonderful personality of Godhead. And Srila Sridhar Swami prays, the Supreme Lord is self-effulgently omniscient. By his great mercy, this universe, which is subject to repeated creation and destruction, remains present within him after merging back into him along with the living entities at the time of cosmic dissolution. This total withdrawal of the universal manifestation occurs suddenly, like the flowing of a river into the ocean. Within the core of my heart, I meditate upon that master of the three worlds, Lord Nrisimha. So, any questions? Yep. Okay. All right. Number one, the soul doesn't die.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. The material body, the soul just leaves the material body either completely or partially. So when the soul leaves the material body at what we call death, if it's not liberated, it will leave the gross body but travel in the subtle body into the next gross body. Yogis also, even though they want to travel to different destinations, if a yogi is able to leave his body and go to some planet within this material universe, they actually still remain within their subtle bodies. But if a yogi desires to leave the material universes and go to the spiritual world Vaikuntha, then they actually dissolve the subtle body as well. But when the living entities actually enter into Mahavishnu, is at the end of Brahma's lifetime. Yeah, it is right at the very end of this particular universal creation. And everything is when all the universes are wound up again within Mahavishnu, is when Mahavishnu exhales, all the universes appear from the pores of his skin, and when he inhales, all those universes are again wound up within the body of Mahavishnu, and the material elements and material coverings of the universe are dissolved. They enter within the material energy, but the seed form of the material universes enter within Mahavishnu, along with all the living entities who have not achieved liberation. Now, they don't carry the subtle body. But they do, the subtle bodies, the gross bodies are all amalgamated within the material energy, but there is still the most subtle covering of not like a subtle body, but still a subtle covering of the material energy in the form of avidya or ignorance. Yeah. So they're not completely uncovered from the material energy. But although there's some covering of the material energy is at that state not exactly manifesting subtle or gross material bodies for them. No, no, no. Only at the end of Brahma's life. What I was discussing there, there are different types of dissolution of a living entity's material existence. There is a very subtle form of it in sleep. When the living entity leaves the body at the time of death, then again there is a form of dissolution of material existence, because the gross material body is dissolved, but still the subtle body is there, and the living entity within the subtle body then goes into another material body. For millions, you know, that if they don't attain liberation, they will do that for about 311,400,000,000,000 years. What's that? There's a little bit in between, although it happens, you know, in a slightly different time frame. The living entity can experience what seems to be eternity in perhaps either hellish conditions or heavenly conditions, and will take birth. Some living entities, not all living entities go to the heavenly planets or hellish regions after birth. They may just straight away take birth in a material body. As soon as they leave this material body, they just take birth in another material body. For those who are particularly sinful, there may also be in between that a trip to, you know, the hellish planets for some extra suffering, if they're particularly sinful.
You take on a material body when you go to those hellish planets, also.
Subtle body, yeah.
I thought that on hellish planets you get like more gross body, and heavenly planets you get more subtle body.
Some of the hellish abodes also, the subtle bodies, because if you were in a gross body, you actually couldn't undergo the amount of suffering that is dealt out to you. So, but in a subtle body, you can, you know, suffer a lot and still maintain your, you know, material existence. There is going to particular hellish planets for hellish punishment, but there is also just taking birth in the lower planetary systems, where you may then get a more grosser form of body, because you're not particularly there for just, you know, intense suffering. In fact, some of the lower planets, which are considered hellish, are also called subterranean heavenly planets. They're hellish because there's just so much enjoyment and sense gratification that there is no question of ever thinking of God or spirituality. It is just, just complete absorption in sense gratification, complete material existence without, you know, spirituality. And so, yeah. Yes, it depends on those planets. So there can be, you know, the more gross body, yeah. And some of them still subtle. Well, for instance, in a subtle body, you know, you can throw someone off a cliff again and again and again. You know. They feel it.
Is it like their consciousness would get full recognition of that? Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's just as if, to them it's just as real as if we were suffering in this gross body. They suffer pain, they do, they suffer pain. Yeah, it is subtle. In one sense, all our suffering and enjoyment is actually mental concoction. It's really all on the subtle platform, in one sense, even when we have a gross body. Because the body is actually, you know, a lump of matter. It really has no consciousness or what have you. So, yeah, ultimately it's... subtle, you know. People can eradicate pain through controlling the subtle body. I've done that myself. Sometimes I've had very severe headaches, and if there hasn't been any, you know, some medication, then I've just mentally perceived what that pain is, and then by perceiving that pain and then understanding that I wasn't the material body, I could actually detach myself from the pain, even though it was there. I was no longer actually experiencing any suffering. I've done that myself. But there are lots of different practices of meditation, what have you, where you can actually detach yourself. You probably, Joel, you know a little bit about that through yoga, where you can detach yourself from pain and pleasure by understanding that you're actually not that gross body. And even though stimulus of pain or pleasure is still present, you're completely aloof from it. I remember one time when I was in Tasmania doing Sankirtan, and I became very ill, and my glands and my throat become swollen. And my throat, I had like strep throat, a very sharp pain there, you know, and my head was just like a migraine, and my nose, I was in a lot of pain, and there was no medication. And I was asleep at night time, and I dreamt that my spiritual master came, and I said, "Oh, have you just flown in?" And he said yes, and then I realised that he actually flew in. He didn't come in a plane. And he had a little jar of sort of Maha Prasadam, and he took the lid off and he gave me one. And I thought, yeah, that's really nice. And when he gave me one, because although I was asleep, I still knew that I was suffering. I was in my dream, I was actually lying in bed, sort of still suffering from this illness. When he gave me the Maha Sweet, I became well. There was no pain, and I was almost like floating in ecstasy. So I went to grab another one. I went to dip my hand in the jar. He put the lid on the jar. I said, that's enough. So when I actually woke up, I was lying there, and although I was just as sick as I was, you know, a second ago, I had no feeling of pain whatsoever. It was like I was literally floating You know, there's no pain and nothing. So, you know, a lot pain, pleasure, a lot of it is really subtle anyway. It's, you know. Yeah.
What you're saying is that we all must have a spiritual master.
Yes, we must have a spiritual master who can save us from pain and suffering.
Who will take care of it?
By giving us Mahaprasadam. Yes. No. No. Yeah. Because he lies on the causal ocean which separates the material existence from the spiritual existence. Yeah.
Very quickly, what's the meaning of Ahipushman, the last Srimad Bhagavatam, lying on the banyan tree and sucking his tail? The end of annihilation.
That pastime, yeah, Krishna is sucking his own tail. Well, although he was in that very cute form of a baby and very, very young, and babies do that, they just suck their toe. So he's almost relishing his own spiritual existence. But although he was in the form of that child, he was still the cause of all material existence which he revealed. So in any form that God exists, whether as a, all his forms are completely fully, he's still fully God in all his forms. That's the significance there. He doesn't have to appear in some mighty feature. He can, in any feature, even as a little baby sucking his toe, he is still fully God. Yeah. Jai, all glory Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.